This podcast is hosted on mtgcast.com with generous sponsorship from quietspeculation.com, Magic's premier financial news site. The staff at Quiet Speculation believes that every Magic player deserves the information that lets them play Magic for less money. To learn more about the fundamentals of getting good trades and instantly engage with a friendly and mature community, go to quietspeculation.com.
What's up? Welcome to Fiction Kinks, episode 3. Finally made it. I am your former pet trained Caraco, who has now found a warm blanket and a purpose in life, and full bone rock space mender, Stephen. Joining me today, I have, as always, I'm not even going to try for you today, Cam. You just Cam. What's up?
Yeah, it's raining, it's cold, it's winter, welcome to the Southern Hemisphere.
Fuck yeah, alright, and of course, as always, we have podcast number 3, failed host attempt, Ross.
Yeah, I'm gonna sit with number 3 this time,
But you went after the earlier debacle.
He just tried to do an introduction, failed miserably, because apparently actors, they can't ad-lib.
He literally told us he couldn't do
it. He couldn't do it without a script.
Just be thankful. Anyone listening to this, be thankful that that's true. I was the first voice you heard.
He's neither funny nor interesting.
I mean, did you save that first recording? We should just chuck it in at the end there.
I think we should, actually. Yeah. I think we can do that as our outro music.
Works for me.
And just put some sort of circus music, you know, something you associate with a clown or, you know. maybe a Burger King theme song. You know, something relevant.
I have no idea where you're going with that, but alright.
I think silence is going to be my best bet tonight.
Yeah.
Love you.
So anyway, Magic. That's what we're all about. What's been happening? Any exciting news anyone wants to talk about?
There are a lot of Modern Masters cards out.
Yeah.
And I want them all.
But they are pretty.
I'm kind of shocked and surprised at how many cards they've retroactively made mythic.
It's, well, with what the set is, it makes sense.
Well, but it doesn't, because the issue that you're going to run into is that it's meant to be a drafted set of solid Masters staples, right?
Yeah.
It's a limited release set, and having all of these at mythic, it just kind of, why not make them out there? I mean, it's only going to be one rare and 8 is going to be mythic.
I think probably just trying to satisfy the community. I mean, to be perfectly honest, if I'm cracking open Modern Masters and I've got just as much chance as opening a Summoner's Pact as I do a Goyf, it doesn't quite seem right in today's day and age, you know?
How many cards is the set? Is it 360?
No, it's 229.
Ooh, so it's halfway size set.
Yeah. Bigger than Dragon's Maze, smaller than Ravnica.
Hmm.
And I laughed when they revealed Lightning Helix, because I was remembering an article where they said they couldn't release Lightning Helix in Ravnica because it was too powerful and yada yada yada.
And yeah, I'm like, this isn't coming into standard. So.
I'm like, that shenanigans. You wanted to release Lightning Helix in Modern Masters. That wasn't a consideration. I mean, what good burn spells do Boros have?
Hang on, we got that new Helix, which is terrible.
it's exceedingly draftable.
Mm.
I haven't actually managed to play it yet. I think I've picked it up in draft a couple of times.
No, I mean, it's pretty strong. I mean, 4 damage is very relevant in this format.
I've lost to it a couple of times.
Mm.
I don't know. Mm. I don't know, I just feel like I'm going to be paying 4 mana.
Well, if you're targeting a player, it's an 8 life swing.
Yeah, I suppose, but, I mean, I've got, Boros Charm for that. I'm not really worried about the life. I can deal 4 damage for 2 mana on Boros Charm.
I mean, there are a lot of very cool cards that are at rare. I mean, Demigod's still rare, Una's rare, all the cool Lorwyn and Eventide cards.
Life in the Loam.
Figure of Destiny. I love that card.
I just like seeing Grape Shot sit there.
Mm.
It's just, it's so pretty.
The new art's really cool too.
I'm still trying to figure out why they felt the need to revamp Maelstrom Pulse's art.
to less detail.
Yeah, to a bunch of lands going crackle crackle.
I suppose because it's a collector's edition more than anything else. Like, it's probably one of the more limited print runs they've ever done.
Yeah, but they...
cards aren't standard.
But from the same set, they didn't update Sarkhan Vol. They didn't update Knight of the Reliquary. They didn't update Mind Funeral. They didn't update Progenitus. Oh,
that's very true.
They didn't update Kitchen Finks.
They didn't update Kitchen Finks.
But then they went and changed the art on Bob. Can we still call it Bob? Bob's not in it anymore.
It's not really Bob anymore, is it?
No.
It's kind of...
Bob-esque.
Bob Spooky Edition.
I think it's Bob in like 10 years.
Aged Bob.
Well, I mean, I can't tell, because from the picture, is he bald or does he have like a emo half-cut swish over to the side?
It's also amusing with the engineered explosive after what's coming out in M14 with Ratchet Bomb.
Oh, M14. Oh, am I excited.
No, by the sounds of things.
Oh, yes.
Angel of Foon.
Yeah. And we're starting to see some real thematic push in terms of creature mechanics, because obviously we're in a phase where creatures are magic right now.
Yeah. Much to your dismay.
Personally, I think that green and white make out best in that, no matter what.
Yeah.
Every time. And everyone else is kind of like, ho-hum. But, we're seeing...
That's where creatures sit. I mean, really, isn't it? Green has the big creatures. White has the sort of slightly more defensive, but it's got the more sort of thematic thing going. Like, if you're going to go creatures, that's where you're going to go. And it's like, you know, personally, I'm all for it. I think.
But when was the last time you saw a good red creature swarm?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, there's nothing that's hugely stand out, but I mean, red's still very red. Even now, like, it's just small, it's efficient, it's quick.
And as much as you say that green's always had the big creatures, that's actually wrong. Green's always had the mid-game creatures. Blue's always had the biggest creatures.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just disgusting. Green's supposed to be the big stompy colours.
Whereas blue is meant to have the conditional uber monsters, the Leviathans and the Kraken.
But hey, I mean, it looks like that's happening again with M14.
Well, blue's getting a massive push in flyers. I mean, I ran those numbers the other day just from what we've seen, and only 3 of the blue creatures don't have some sort of evasion. And that's like Coral Merfolk, Scroll Thief, and, what was the other one? Archaeomancer.
Yeah.
Everything else is either flying, unblockable, or, you know, something to that effect, has some sort of evasion on it. Black.
The only one I can't really figure out that what's going on is black.
Yeah, black doesn't seem to be doing anything. I've got a lot of undead.
They've gone, alright, like Naya, you guys can have the slivers. Blue, crap ton of flying. Black, you got Doomblade, that'll fucking do. You know?
Yeah, I know. It's like, here, have Doomblade and Mind Rot. Gee, because Mind Rot's really useful in this day and age. Though Sengir Vampire coming back.
Which rule is going to make you happy?
Love that card. It's fantastic. It's a 4/4 flyer for 5 that gets bigger when it kills stuff.
Yeah.
You know, put a mark of the vampire on it, go forth and have fun, kiddies. Child of Night? Was that in M13? I don't think it was it?
I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was. It's the lifelinker? 3-1 lifelink, wasn't it?
2-1 lifelink?
2-1 lifelink.
Was that in M13?
I think it was. So. We're bad at this, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
Let me have a look.
Alright, well while you're saying that, I just saw something that I hadn't seen before, and it was very, very pretty, and now I've lost it. So that really ruined that whole train of thought. The flyer that makes flyers cost less.
Oh my god, that is the most blue creature that ever blew.
It's amazing.
No, Child of Night was not in M13, so...
Alara?
Child of Night came out...
M12?
M10. It was M10, M11, and M12, was dropped in M13, back M14, which means that we have... Not just Child of Night, we also have Tithe Drinker. So that's 2/2-drop, 2-power lifelink vampires. Nice.
Your smiling is also.
I am actually. I'm not losing much in my Orzhov, my Child of Aristocrat aggro deck, which is different to the standard Aristocrat aggro deck.
Hmm.
You know, Vampire Warlord, 5-drop, 4-2 that can be regenerated by sacrificing a creature. Well, I could always do with regenerators that sacrifice grave crawlers to my Blood Artists.
Yeah.
Totally cool with that. Though losing Blood Artists is going to make me cry.
Although, just thinking, if we extend now into Extended or Modern, we now have 12 Llanowar Elves.
Mm.
With the Elvish Mystic out, which
yep.
is interesting that it's an Elf Druid and it taps for mana. So they've given it the same benefits exactly the same had without the negative.
It's exactly the same as Llanowar, isn't it? Llanowar is an Elf Druid.
No, really? Is it now?
Yeah. Pretty sure it was.
The art always sort of suggested it was like an Elf Warrior, but I think it was a Druid, isn't it?
Oh, you're right. Meh. Yeah.
So it's actually just a punch.
It's exactly the same. It's like Grizzly Bears. But no. Let's face it, how many people actually know what Llanowar is?
It's only just come out of cycle.
Yeah, but no, how many people actually know what Llanowar is?
Oh, yeah.
That setting hasn't been in Magic since Legion?
Oh, right.
Can I say? Maybe Urza? Okay. It's a location.
Case in point.
You know, it's yeah, you see? And it's a location. Llanowar is a location, and there was...
That makes so much more sense now.
Yeah.
Like, why the fuck is he repeating the name? Yeah, Llanowar Elf, I know.
Yeah, it's a location, and I think that's a lot of it, is that they're really pushing to rebrand chunks of the mythos that is showing on the cards. But, yeah, going back to your original point, Warden of Evos Isle. 3-drop 2/2 flyer? Already good.
Yeah.
Well, already good.
How often do we draft Windrake?
Uncommon? Excellent. Creature spells with flying? Creature spell non-color specific? Cost you one colorless less to cast?
That's gonna be insane. I mean, it looks like blue-white flyers. A little splash of life gain if you manage to pick up the Archangel of Foon.
Mm-hmm.
Insane.
And we're starting to see the themes coming through for Theros as well.
Your undead Minotaurs?
Minotaurs.
Ooh.
We've got another Cockatrice.
Mmm.
And I haven't seen a Cockatrice in a long time. We've got, Root Wallace turned up again, which is a surprise. But it's always had sort of basiliscus leanings, you know? It's got that sort of... I think vampires will be in Theros. I think there's not many options for black creatures aside from Gorgons.
Yeah, I think the Gorgons have to be.
Yeah. And then you got undead, and they'll probably put vampires in, because everybody loves vampires. Yeah, and, you know, we've got a better muscle sliver out, so I'm pleased.
Oh, that's greedy. Is that the 6-drop or
sliver? No, the 2-drop 1/1 +1/+1.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
almost a functional reprint, but you're not benefiting any creatures. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually, I'm holding out for what we're going to see come through in terms of Planeswalkers now. I think that will be very telling. And there's been another 12 Modern Masters releases in the past couple of hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Murderous Redcap, Mind Funeral, Lava Spike, Eternal Witness.
Is it Mind Funeral and I pictured Wit's End?
Hmm. Yeah, there are some, I mean, I'd love to get a hold of some of those packs, and if they do make them non-tradable across the set online, I'll still play quite a bit of it, I imagine.
This is Modern Masters you're talking about?
Yeah.
Actually. Yeah.
I can't imagine they'll make it non-tradable.
No. I think I heard something, I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard something about it being released online, but there's a non-tradable item.
It just feels...
They don't exactly want to inundate the market with Tarmogoyfs.
No, but if you limit it to just, what's it called? When they organise it, wow, I'm doing terribly today. I'll find it.
Sanctioned events.
Yeah, exactly. If you just keep it on scheduled events, then you're not having a fire on fill, and they can actually monitor the level that enters the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
sounds like unnecessary work. But speaking of planeswalkers, there is a Liliana's Reaver in the spoiled cards.
Yep, Liliana will be in
Liliana will be a Reaver.
There's also a Rise of the Dark Veil.
Oh, okay, so it's definitely a Liliana thing.
It's definitely going to be Liliana in it.
Which will work really nice with those rule changes, now that you can have Lilianas each.
Sorry, Rise of the Dark Realms. It's a black, black 7. Put all creature cards from all graveyards onto the battlefield under your control.
Yeah, I like that. That was a brilliant segue. You guys just stomped all over it.
Yeah.
How could you? So as I was saying, with the new Lilianas, the new rule changes, we'll all be playing Lilianas.
I already do.
No, that's true. The thing that we can keep it
the legendary rule now.
Well,
this is the other uniqueness rule. It's the other big piece of news that happened, which I'm sure everybody's already heard about, but
especially assuming this will be ages till it goes up.
Hope not.
We'll try and be a little bit more consistent.
sorry about the delay in getting this one even recorded, because, you know, someone had shows that they had to act in.
But it's okay, he can do that, because they give him the words.
I guess it wasn't me. It's our fourth member, Fred.
What were you doing then? Huh?
I was...
sitting in the basement fapping. Yeah, that's right.
I was running.
That's awkward, because he actually just pretty much sleep in the basement.
Yeah, he does.
This got real awkward now.
One day we'll flood your bedroom and it will be hilarious.
It already does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, other than that, the legendary rule. And that, again, that's another big indicator that Theros will be a heavy legendary set.
Yeah.
I mean, we all thought that Ravnica was fairly legendary. There was two legendaries per guild. But that was the same as the original Ravnica as well. You know, one guild leader, one guild champion. But, you could very well see Kamigawa level, and I suspect we will, given that it's another theme set, this one.
Yeah.
Ancient Roman, you know, classical era, rather than Bushido Japan.
How many times do you think at the draft table you're gonna hear, "I'm Spartacus"?
Oh my god, I hope not.
No, I'm
I'm sorry.
I'm warning. It's gonna happen.
I could see a red white multicolor car that's called Boot into the Pit.
Oh well.
It'll be something like 2 Tapper creature you control, destroy target, monocolored permanent, or something like that.
Oh.
That would be awesome, actually. I'd totally play that.
That'd be like, "This is Theros."
This is Theros.
Can you imagine that discussion? Oh my god, so I dropped "This is Theros" into "Release the Kraken." It was sick, bro.
Release the Kraken.
Well, speaking of the new rules, actually.
Yep.
The biggest change that doesn't affect me, but I love, is the sideboarding rule.
Oh my god,
it's fine. It's just, because the number of times you're drafting and you don't know what you changed. You don't know what you took out or put in, and neither does your opponent. And you're just left there going,
But you still need to restore your deck after the game, after the match.
Yeah, it's not going to affect drafting at all.
The more interesting thing is, like, what Stephen and I were talking about, where you go in with basically a wit's end deck of 300 cards. And then depending on how you get taken out in game one, you rebuild your deck from scratch into whatever you want.
Well, I thought it couldn't happen that way. I thought it had to go the other way around.
No, you can go in with 250 and then whittle down to 60. You can go in with 70 and 10 in your sideboard and build up to 70. You can go either way. So long as you're playing with at least 60 cards in each game, you're fine.
Kind of crazy.
I thought there was that dropping it that low was...
Nope, there was an article on Daily NTG, which I gather you two don't actually look at, but I do.
Well, that's what I was looking at previously. I was just trying to find it again, actually.
Because that seems quite insane. I mean, you run in with the Battle of Wits deck, which is actually just 5 of the currently played Tier 1 decks, wait to see what your opponent's playing, and then sideboard down to his worst matchup and go from there.
Just looking at it again, Game 1, 250-15. Subsequent games, 60-205 is illegal. Because you can't have your sideboard higher than 15 cards.
Right, so your sideboard has to be 15 cards.
Yeah.
You can't
do that. That's why it's illegal.
That's disappointing. Because that would be the most awesome tournament play ever. You go in and basically intend to lose game one every time.
Well, try and battle with them, I guess.
What are you running? Red Deck Wins, Naya Blitz, Human Reanimator, a little bit of a brew, and I threw a Battle of Wits in there because I got 300 cards. Good luck, bro.
I'm just waiting for you to come up against the Mill Deck in your first game and then win.
Yes, all of a sudden.
Battle of Wits. Brilliant.
All of a sudden, Turbo Fog is actually a thing. And not just a fond hope.
Oh. But it will be, as I said again, it will be quite interesting to see how the new Legend rule actually affects deck construction as a whole, because you're not going to, or you're potentially not going to see that case where people are now only running one or two copies of that mythic or one or two of those planeswalkers. Like, playing four of your legendary creature is now quite a viable option.
Well, it's like Borborygmos. Who doesn't have vigilance. I swing with Borborygmos, and then I play a new Borborygmos, and I get rid of the tap.
Yeah. Very expensive vigilance, but, you know, that's fair.
But it's very powerful, though, at the same time. I mean, attacking with Borborygmos is pretty...
What they isolated in that article of, you play a Jace, you use his ability, you play another Jace, sacrifice the used one's ability, and then you use his ability. It's just,
That's horrible. Perhaps more interestingly, what we could end up with is we could end up with a situation where, given, like, Liliana of the Dark Realms, who at this point in time is kind of like, well, what's the point of this? It's about as useful as Tobolt. You know, niche decks. I haven't seen a competitive deck with Liliana the Dark Realms enough.
Mm.
But that sort of acceleration could be a lot more usable if you can use it twice, you know, because she fetches up swamps.
Yeah.
I think, or something like that.
Yes, she does. And then she can make all your swamps tap for four. She's like a Lathe of the Dead.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, that'd be interesting. We'll see what they, I don't think, again, the M14 stuff isn't really going to have an effect. Those rule changes aren't going to have an effect until Theros comes up.
Is it Theros, or I thought it was M14?
It's M14, but they won't have an effect on until Theros comes out. Because, I mean, the indestructible one might, depending on if they retcon indestructibility. This card has indestructibility into those cards all have the ability indestructible.
The keyword.
At which point it is an ability and can be removed, that's going to be interesting. But that's if they retcon it. I mean, they never retconned a bunch of lifelink stuff. Going back, they just retconned stuff that they were still making, still printing into lifelink. Yeah. So, like, Loxodon Hammer got changed, but Armadillo Cloak didn't.
Yeah.
Because Loxodon Hammer was released again in that core set. And Armadillo Cloak...
as a rare.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
Thankfully.
But it should be halfway between uncommon and rare. And uncare.
Powerful. Anything. But then they release the swords, so.
Yeah.
Then they release more swords. Because we needed more swords.
You can never have enough swords.
Well, I'm wondering if they're ever going to do allied colour swords.
I think it's kind of... it almost feels like it defeats the purpose.
Hmm. But they might.
They might.
It's an option that they could go back to.
They'd almost have to reduce the power on them, though. Or increase the cost.
Wow.
The Boros Lightning Helix sword that costs 4 and 4, you'd play it.
Boros Lightning Helix, they've already got a red white one. It's called Sword of War and Peace.
Oh, they do too. They currently
only have enemy colours, so there's 5 combinations.
Red, white, enemy?
Chaos and order.
My brain.
Why am I?
Green is the linking color between red and white. White is opposed to black and red.
Yes. Brain is slowly catching up.
Okay.
I might have caught up by tomorrow.
Right. Well, we'll save you from that one and move on to a discussion topic for the week. So I thought it would be quite cool, considering we do sort of tote ourselves as a casual podcast, we're not hugely competitive players, to talk about, like, how we approach deck building as a whole. Obviously, we're not sitting there grinding. We're not deck testing constantly. We're not trying to win tournaments. So yeah, that'll be quite cool to just discuss sort of what our techniques are, what makes us excited about a deck, how we do that. So why don't you take us off? Who's built a deck recently? Anyone?
Me.
Ross? All right, well, why don't you sort of talk us through that to, that commander. But that's cool. Walk us through that. Like, I mean, sort of, how did you go about that?
I think commander's a different style because you're starting off from your commander.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not, your commander's not really going to do much use to you. But in regular deck construction, if I was to go back to last time's challenge, which was the Return of the Bears challenge, it was a case of knowing what my limitations were. If I'm building a standard deck, I know I'm limited, of course, to the standard card pool. In this one, I knew I was limited to creatures with power 2 and 2. And so I scanned through what is available and look what grabs my attention. And then from there, we'll see if there's enough left within the limitations that will benefit it. So if I'm in a standard pool, I look through. I think my first deck I built in the current standard metagame was my terrible red deck Wins, which I started going through, seeing things like Stormkirk Noble, and the 4/3 when it comes to play, they can pay 4 life and it dies.
The Hell Hound?
No, it's the Vexing Devil.
Yes, there we go.
And at the time I actually had the Hellhound in there, the 2/2 double striker with Unearth. No, not Unearth. Not Persist either, the other one.
Undying.
There we go. And going through in that way, because they all seem to complement. Quick, red, damage. That's how I went around it. Obviously, didn't shape up to be a massive deck, but it was a lot of fun. But I kind of, start from that central place, which was either the Stromkirk or the double striker. And just go from there and see if there's enough to complement, and if there is, well, I make the deck from it.
Mm-hmm.
So is that to say you build around a card, or are you generally building around an idea?
But it's the card that starts the idea. And so sometimes it will be centered around a card, and sometimes the card will start an idea. Like in that frame, it really was starting an idea, which was one that has been around since the beginning of Magic. Red, cheap, getting damaged through quick. And that's what the idea of the deck was, and everything else just sort of followed through that made sense to go with it. Whereas then, in other decks, it's been built around the card, or a couple of cards, that either drawing into them, accelerating into them, and bringing in other things that'll help it throughout. But that's mine. I tend to, as we say, shy away from net decking or some such. But I do like to see a starting frame and build around it. Rather than the whole idea at first.
So do you approach it from a, like, trying to make the most efficient, competitive, best deck you can? Or are you more like, okay, this seems like it would be really fun? So you are still trying to, so you're essentially brewing badly.
Correct.
Based on cards and ideas, which
I'm a very bad version of BDM.
I'm not sure you quite sort of register on the same scale, to be honest, but.
Very bad version.
But that would suggest you're still on his scale.
Oh, yeah, no, that's good.
Yeah. So I know, I think, Cam, you probably approach things a little bit differently to the both of us, don't you?
I like colours.
You like colours? Would you like some crayons for those colours?
I would. I have my preferred colours. Whenever I go to build a deck, I usually go, I want to build these colours. And then I will quite shamelessly look around on the net to see what sort of ideas people have and such. my most recent and probably the most successful deck is my Orzhov deck. Which is about 60% net deck, and the rest of it's kind of, well, I can't afford those, that many opposite ups. What else can I do instead? Yeah, like I start with, I want black-white, or I want red-white, or I feel like building an Esper deck, or I want red-white-black. You're seeing a theme here, there's no green.
Because it's his favorite color.
Though I am still, every so often, I'm tempted, I'm like, I could make a Simic deck. I can make a Thalesnia deck. And then I'm like, no, bad Cameron. Down. You can't play green. You suck at it. Yeah, I start from colors and then I'll look at what I have, sort of pricing for it. I often look at budgeting pretty early on in the piece to see if I can actually build it. It's one of the reasons I don't have an Esper deck at the moment is that I look at the prices and go, there's no way I can build a competitive Esper deck at this point in time with Sphinx's Revelation and Detention Sphere and Supreme Verdict being so expensive. Particularly in an age where blue is a control color. Esper is the premier control color combination, and has been since Alara. And with spells being as generally crap as they are compared to creatures, the spells which you do need tend to be quite expensive.
Yeah.
You know, in any other day and age, go back 4 or 5 years, something like Sphinx's Revelation probably wouldn't have been that expensive.
That's fair.
There were more options, there were more powerful spells at the time. There, you know, we were running control decks that were blue, white, red. You know, or you could play, mono black control was really strong. Back when we had, Vampire Hexmage and, Malakir and all those sorts of things.
Gatekeeper of Malakir. That card was badass.
That was useful. That was useful. Imagine it in this day and age. Some of the bounce spells around. Return to hand stuff, all that sort of thing.
Far and away, Gatekeeper of Malakir.
Mm.
Yeah.
Soul net deck to an extent. Sometimes I'll get taken by a particular card and decide I want to build something around that. But generally it's colours. I like my deck to be aesthetically pleasing. I have issues with playing cards I don't actually like the look of. Which is, you know, problematic.
Like in an art sense?
Or? Yeah, in an art sense. I need to actually be able to look at a card and say, I'm happy with actually having this card and in my hand and looking at it and putting it on the battlefield and looking at it. And looking at it on the table. If I don't like how it looks, I probably won't feel it.
I guess that's fair, being a control player. I guess you spend more time looking at spells in
your
hand
than anything else. We are a bunch of wankers. It's
another way of putting it.
But I mean, how many control decks am I running at the moment?
Yeah, that's true. It's just, I saw the opportunity to take a stab.
I know. At the moment, I basically conceded to creatures win games. And I'm like, okay, I can deal with that. I mean, there's no decent blue sphinxes. There's nothing running around that's like super combative that I'm really happy with in blue. So I've got my Boros and my Orzhov aggro decks.
Come to the right side, Ken.
aggro was my most successful deck. Was my Boros extended deck back years ago.
Way back.
You know,
the dawn of magic.
Yeah, I should really sell those goblin guides. And those fetch lands. And those Ravnica sacred foundries and all that sort of stuff.
We come to your house warming when you buy a house?
No. Not anymore.
Uh-huh. What did I do?
Yeah, so I'm more of a, I start with aesthetics and then throw money at the problem.
If it's worth enough, it must be pretty.
Pretty much.
It's like Hollywood.
I think that's a lot of it as well, is that a card may not be particularly pretty, but if I know it's expensive, I will convince myself that it is. You know, like any art form. If it costs $20 million to make, gotta be pretty.
Yeah, you don't say that about Paris Hilton.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was a $2 back alley job in Thailand.
What?
That was so many levels of crawl on top of my crawl.
I know.
I'm not sure who I feel worse for, you or Paris.
I feel bad for me all the time. Don't stress it. Anyway, Stephen.
Me. Yeah, I suppose a pseudo mix of both, probably leaning more towards to how Ross goes about it. So I think I generally will just sort of be having a look around, and I'll come up with a concept or an idea, and sort of start building around that. I mean, that concept or that idea will generally come from, seeing certain cards. So I think as I talked about it on the last episode, my black-red vampire deck, that was pretty much built around, the Falcon Wrath Aristocrat. Falcon Wrath.
Aristocrat?
Yeah, I got confused. Falcon Wrath Exterminator, you see what I did?
You're a Maquis, and you're a Maquis, and you're a Maquis, and everybody's a Maquis!
Yeah, so I saw the Falcon Wrath Exterminator, and decided to start building around that. I think the fact that I'm a fairly terrible card evaluator helps me keep things a little bit original, because I saw that card, just like, oh my god. How is, like, everybody not playing that? Like, it's just removal on a stick. But, yeah, so that's just my general approach. I think my latest attempt at building a deck, which is kind of terrible, was my Simic deck. the idea behind that was
that
I
the
got...
the elf one?
That's the elf, yeah.
Have you built it?
Oh, I've built a framework on it. I couldn't afford the dual lands and whatnot. So it's,
and that kind of kills the deck.
It does a little bit, but the idea behind this one was I saw the Gaia Sage and the Fathom Mage, and I was like, man, blue-green, like, you've got all of this ramp. You can now ramp with blue-green. A lot of the blue-green cards have this card draw ability. I'm like, well, what if I just try and produce as much mana as I possibly can, as quickly as I can, and keep drawing cards to do this, and then just drop a Crater Hoof, which I can't actually afford. But, you know, drop some sort of win condition, which hopefully I'll get through or get to very quickly. I mean, it was essentially, I guess, sort of a similar idea to the Elf Wave deck, which was around for a while, with Genesis Wave, the green one?
Yeah.
Yep.
We'd ramp into, you know, X is equal to 12 and drop your entire deck for the win. So I was trying to do a very similar thing to that, but in blue and green and just using card draw instead of Genesis Wave. So I think, to me, it's an idea for the deck that gets me most excited. I wanna have fun, and I wanna try and be competitive. Mm-hmm. I think my other sort of defining factor is I can't play smart or drawn out magic. I'm a really impatient magic player.
You have
efficient, the better.
The best history for the worst plays ever.
Ah.
I mean, bar none. Your ability to lose a game that you're winning is spectacular.
I could play around that Supreme Verdict, or I could just drop these three creatures that I really like swinging with. Come on. What are you going to do? You're going to drop the three creatures, right? That's way more exciting.
And now you wonder why I try and take forever to play a game.
If I sit here quietly and long enough, he's bound to screw it up.
Strategy.
I see. Steven.
But, you know, it's fun. That's what it's all about, right?
I just heard the hokey pokey sound when you said that's what it's all about.
Turn around.
Bright
I
eyes.
Never want you to say that to me. Now we're quoting Garfunkel? This is my kind of podcast.
Oh, Lord. I'm going to need to put some metal on in a second. But, I mean, let's face it, Stephen, you have this tendency, I've noticed, to play black-green. I actually think a lot of your deck building tends to be, I see a mechanic that I like.
Yeah, mechanics is another big one. Like, I just see, like, an idea, or I see something in a sort of broader picture that I like. Yeah. So, I mean, a mechanic will often be an idea you can build an entire deck around. I don't know about black-green. I do like black, though. I think that's probably...
You've had your Infect deck. You're on Golgari now.
Black-green. I've got Golgari. But then I played, you know, I've got the Vamps, which is black-red.
But your Golgari deck is substantially better.
It is substantially better, yeah.
Your Infect deck was substantially better.
Yeah, okay, I'm blanking. I do like, yeah, I gotta admit.
His best multiplayer deck is still his mono white life game, which him and I crashed a server playing against
Yes, I heard about that one, yeah. Yeah, the token swarm.
Yeah, so it turns out when someone's dropping like 20 tokens a turn and his opponent's gaining life and counters for every creature that enters the board, Magic Online servers doesn't like it so much.
Yeah, we got booted from the game 3 times and it replayed it in front of us and then it just said, yeah, no, you're not playing anymore. We felt good.
I'm pretty sure that means we clocked Magic Online, right?
Achievement unlocked.
You've now officially won the game.
Oh, you just lost the game
with your pro points.
You can't win the game. I've got a Platinum Angel. I'm safe.
Oh, hey, so you can't lose the game like I
can't lose your game.
That Platinum Angel is on. It's not going to be any good to use it.
I don't think Steven gets a reference.
No.
Oh, the Platinum Angel states you can't lose the game.
Yeah, you don't know the reference about the game, though, do you?
The game?
Oh, stop.
Lose.
Oh, you bastard.
There we go. Okay.
I think we just eradicated any form of listener base.
Oh, damn it, I lost the game.
I'm sorry. Quite frankly, anybody who adheres to that stupid mindless game, it's like the game that shall not be named. Get out.
I never heard it, and I don't want to know. If you were listening, and you did just lose the game, send your hate mail to Ken.
Yeah, please. Please do. So I can laugh at you. Okay? I will laugh at you. I will actually giggle like a schoolgirl. Quite happily.
Oh, as a side note. Sorry. Do you mind?
Oh, different.
But, Ken, built a new commander online. I want to take you on with it, but because so far I've lost it every game I've played.
Okay.
Be a lot of fun.
I was brainstorming another commander deck today after I had a rage quit last night. It turns out dropping a turn 4 Tezzeret and a turn 5 Tamiyo makes people leave games. So
if
I've decided...
That wasn't me, but if I was playing him, I would have rage quit.
and counterspelling everything that they play in order to get their last two basic lands out so they can play their 5-color commander. And in the meantime, you're keeping their 1 blue mana tapped up? Yeah, they're kind of...
With no creatures on the board? I complain that Magic is trying to force creature combat.
Well, Commander never is. Commander still has all the powerful stuff. Yeah, I've decided that I'm actually going to, at some point, invest the tickets. And I'm going to buy one of every Planeswalker except for Jason Mindsculptor. And I'm going to play a 5-color...
Super Friends
deck. Fit Commander.
But you have to have some way of fetching out Dublin Cube. Make your commander something that'll get you an enchantment. You drop Dublin Cube, because this is actually a deck I've been trying to build.
In 5-color?
What's Dublin?
Yes.
Dublin Season.
Commander. Oh, right.
Oh, right.
Dublin Season only affect tokens or creatures?
I thought it was permanents.
If it would come in, if something would come in with a number of permanents, you double those.
Counters.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah. I say the wrong word.
In Modern Masters.
That makes a lot of sense.
If an effect would put one or more tokens onto the battlefield under your control that puts twice as many of those tokens in the battlefield instead, if an effect would place one or more counters on a permanent you control, it places twice that many of those counters on that permanent instead. So when it comes into play and you put tokens on it, I guess it would double then, and then when you pump them with their plus whatever,
yep.
Put tokens on them then.
Most of the time you won't even have to do that. Most of the time you will simply be able to pop them when you play them.
Did you realize that actually makes Sarkhan Volder Mad kind of playable?
Yeah. So many of them.
Wait, would it work like that?
Yes.
So it doesn't come into play, or so it essentially comes into play and then you put whatever the base loyalty number of counters on, so it would come into play with double. Oh, wow.
That's what I'm curious about, is that does it affect Planeswalkers? I have to have a look at that.
It says cards, specifically.
See, my suspicion would be that wording. When you plus one there, then you'd get 2 counters on its base.
Yep, you would do that. Let's see.
We just need to stop discussing
Doubling Season
rules.
Affects cards that enter the battle with a certain number of counters on them. Triskelion, for example, would enter the battlefield with 6 plus 1 plus 1 counters on it rather than 3. So yes, it would indeed affect Planeswalkers.
How pretty is that?
That's horrific.
I know. It's so pretty. I've just got a list of things I can't afford here that are amazing. Because playing Liliana of the Veil for 3 and then popping her.
Look at that.
Or how about Chandra Nayla and it not dying?
I'm gonna put this in my screw with everybody EDH deck now.
Well, let's see. It would take 3 turns to fire off Jace Balloran's ultimate,
which is
to clarify, Nicol Bolas when it's played.
Nicol Bolas when it's played. Yep.
Yep. And so's Tomoyo.
Jace Balloran's one is +2, each player draws a card, -1, target player draws a card, -10, target player puts the top 20 cards of his or her library into a graveyard.
Oh my god, no, my EDH deck, the one that's just gonna mess with everyone. Calm.
Calm?
You don't, Calm Liberated? Comes to play with 6 loyalty counters, if you remove 14, restart the game.
Yeah. Hatred. So much hatred. Oh no, we're okay. Steven won't have the patience to play it.
Oh, that's really true.
He'll start the game again and go, oh,
I'm out.
Alright. Well, that's deck building craziness and a massive tangent for Super Super Friends.
It is. So now we get to what is slowly becoming my least favourite part of the entire show. The challenge results.
Where I conceded to Ross.
Why?
Why? Because I'm playing exactly the same deck as Steven.
Again.
Because...
What happened between Steven and I?
Yeah. I know what happened, because I was hoping that this time you wouldn't be a complete dick and wouldn't play them. Which is why I didn't play them.
Turns out I just thought zombies was going to be a good idea.
Yeah, well, I thought zombies would be a good idea as well. I thought blue-black zombies, I had Muldrifter in there to draw some cards, I had, you know, it was shiny. I was like, okay, but I had Gatekeeper of Malakir, I had my zombies, I was like, cool, I had 2 Fritzing Crusaders, 2 Death Barons. You know, this was the 2-2 deck challenge, and Steven and I played each other, and did I beat you?
You did.
So I beat you, yeah. You won one match, didn't you? Yes.
I did, but I stupidly splashed blue and then used my rare slot to play a double blue card, which turns out doesn't work so well when you're splashing that.
What was your double blue card?
It was a human wizard.
Oh, that guy's terrible. That wasn't Lich Lord of Unks?
No. Oh, no, sorry, I had two of the human wizards, Lich Lord of the Unks, and a Lord of the Undead.
Yeah, it should never have been any of those. You should have just gone, like, I went 2 Phyrexian Crusader, 2 Death Baron.
It seemed like a good idea at the time. See, so I'm sitting down thinking, well, what's the thing? We've got 2 twos. So if I can make my creatures bigger than a 2-2, like, significantly, then I should be doing okay. IA didn't actually realize that elves had so many claws.
Yeah.
I found a whole bunch of zombies, and I was like, zombies got a little bit of removal. And the Havengal Runebiter, which was the 2 human.
Nah, is terrible.
2 generic, 1 blue, tap, exile a creature card from your graveyard, put a 2-2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield, and put a +1/+1 counter on each zombie you control. I was like, well, if I tap that enough, it's going to be bigger than anyone else's, right? Turns out I was wrong.
No, yours were bigger than mine.
Play.
Yeah, but his were faster.
I had a lot more of them.
Yeah.
Imperious Perfect was just my best find. It was better than my rare.
It's utterly disgusting, that card.
For 1 green and 2 generic. Yeah, I get a 2-2. That's cool. Other elf creatures I control get +1/+1. Yeah, that's cool. But for 1 green, I can tap it and put a 1/1 elf into play? Oh.
Yeah, that was disgusting. There were a bunch of... I was looking at the elves and going, so they've got Nettle Sentinel. That's not broken. And then my other deck was actually a really sneaky one. The other deck I had drawn up was a really sneaky one, because it was a blue-white deck. And the win cons were lands. Celestial Colonnade.
Yep.
4 Celestial Colonnades? Yeah, I'll take that. Come at me, bro. I've got man lines.
Speaking of land win cons, totally going off topic here very quickly. Oh, God. But turns out, I shall publicly apologize. I was wrong. Mazes End might actually be a thing. Alright, I said that. Moving on.
It is a thing in Block Constructor. It turns out it was a thing at Pro Tour Dragon's Maze. That's
important. And anyway, back to the deck challenge. Ross, why don't you run through your deck list, and let the
listeners if you've got it there.
Stomp.
Alright. Well, for the rare, I went fairly basic and went for the Ultra Charge Droid. 2-2 makes everything else bigger, and it gives me more mana, which is always nice. As I say, the Imperious Perfect was really the gold star of the deck, made everything else a lot prettier. The next one in line would probably be the Wolf Skull Shaman, 2 for 2/2 kinship. Basically, if I'm revealing an elf, which, of course, I was going to, I'd put a 2/2 green wolf into play. Mm-hmm. So, 66% of my turns I'm going to. 3 Acidic Slime, because Death Touch is awesome. Plus, I can destroy land, which is really funny against Steven when he was trying to get to double blue.
I hate you.
Carry on.
No, I was contemplating an Acidic Slime deck just to really, really mess with people, but yeah. 5 mana.
Yeah, the Arch Druid really helped me there.
Yeah.
And everything else was just sort of go through, look at the reasonable 2/2 elf, Safeholder Elite, Nettle Sentinel, Laserliner Bowmaster, which didn't really come up against much. And Civic Wayfinder, which, well, reduced the number of lands I was going to reveal on Kinship.
Mm-hmm.
That was nice.
Hmm. What about you, Stephen? You already got through your rares.
I just dropped. Ross, I've dropped from the call.
Cam, did you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I didn't drop from the call.
That's even funnier. What?
It told me I'd hung up. And then I could, yeah. Anyway, sorry. So yeah, my deck list. Moving right along.
Retard.
So yeah.
You're the best part of the entire cast.
Just to clarify, I am retarded, but I wasn't actually trying to yell down my microphone through a call that I thought had disconnected. He is actually just outside my window.
Not in a creepy way.
Well,
sometimes.
Anyway, yeah, my deck list. Speaking of zombies. I've got, what I run, really basically 4 Undead Executioner, because it was the closest thing I could find to removal without too much effort. In a deck that wasn't allowed to play spells, so that's obviously a 2-2 when it dies, type of creature gets -2/-2 and 2/2.
Mm-hmm.
Diagraph Captain, which is a 1 blue black 2-2, obviously zombie creatures get +1/+1, whenever a zombie dies, target opponent loses 1 life. The Havengal Runebinders, which I covered earlier, Diagraphical, 1 drop 2/2, comes to play tapped. Tattered Drake, 2/2 flyer, black to regen, Nano Husk, sacrifice a creature, gets +2/+2, Death Baron, which is a zombie lord, Lich Lord of the Unks, which I probably should have capitalized on a little bit more, so it's blue-black tap, put a 1/1, blue-black zombie wizard creature token onto the battlefield, blue-blue-black-black target player loses X life, and puts the top X cards of his or her library into his or graveyard, where X is the number of zombies control, Severed Legion, it's got fear. Cedric Alchemist, if you control another multicolored permanent, return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. And a Farbog Boneflinger. When Farbog Boneflinger enters the battlefield, target creature gets -2/-2. And yeah, that was my deck. It was terrible. I got stomped by pretty much everyone.
Okay.
That was fun.
I was trying to be a bit more clever. So I had...
trying to be clever.
I had Mole Drifters for starters, which 2/2 flyer, when Mole Drifter enters the battlefield, draw 2 cards, cost 5 to drop, or you can evoke it for 3, so it becomes a divination. Grave Diggers to get stuff back, same with Ghoul Razor. I had Infectious Horrors, because I figured everybody hates losing life. that's a 2/2, when it attacks, each opponent loses 2 life. Sightless Ghoul, 2/2 Undying, can't block. 2 Death Barons, which, you know, zombies get +1/+1 and have Death Touch. two Phyrexian Crusaders, because first strike protection from red and white and infect. I had three gangrenous zombies, and every single last one of my swamps was a snow-covered swamps. Because gangrenous zombies is a 3-drop 2-2, tap set gangrenous zombies, deals 1 damage to each creature and each player. If you control a snow swamp, gangrenous zombies deals 2 damage to each creature and player instead.
Ooh.
Quite nice.
It's quite funny, actually. When I sat down to play Cam, I looked at him, and he dropped snow-covered swamps.
Swamp.
Like, oh, God, I was going to do that. I lost my deck list right before I started building the deck. I forgot what I'd originally put on there, and so I decided to just sort of lump it together best I could. And then I saw the snow-covered zombie. Snow-covered zombies.
so chilly!
the snow-covered swamps. That was just a facepalm moment right there.
Yep. I had my Diagraph Captains. I had 4 Gatekeepers of Malakir because removal was fun. And a star, an absolute star against Steven's deck, Sewer Shambler. No, it wasn't Sewer Shambler, it was the other one. It was,
Swamp Walk.
It was another Swamp Walk one. And my sideboard was actually all... I had Protection from Green, I had Flying, I had Fear, I had Swamp Walk, and I had Enclave Elite. Which is a 3-drop 2-2 with Multi-Kick of Blue 1 to add 1-1 counters onto it, and it has Island Walk.
Ooh.
Yet another one that Steven went, huh? I have Islands and Swamps.
Yeah, so it turns out you did what one of us always does and totally broke my metagame.
Yeah.
It sounds interesting. Unfortunately, I don't think they print enough protection from green for you to have any chance against elves over there.
So, Zombie Outlander. Black, blue, 2-2, pro green.
Yeah, but 4 of them ain't going to be much use to you when he's putting 2-2 wolves and, you know.
But that's where things like Death Baron come into play. All zombies have Death Touch.
I actually managed to drop one of those, and just the sheer swarm against Ross, it was just quicker and more efficient. It was just a better deck, unfortunately. I hate it.
Elves are always
I'll probably edit that out, but...
Elves are usually a better deck.
Yeah, very true.
I'm not playing with it this week, so...
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
I don't know what... I couldn't think of anything to do as a deck challenge.
Oh, it's so hard being on top, isn't it?
That's okay. I've got one. This is one that Stephen and I have talked about. Right.
Right, fire away.
So this one isn't really magic.
Good start for a magic.
It's not a kind of magic.
God, don't sing.
Basically, pick 3 booster packs from any set that you want. No, wait. Any 3 booster packs you want.
Ross's little heart's about to break.
We are then going to randomize who has which pack.
So grab bag, essentially.
You will end up with 3 packs chosen at random from the 9 that are there. That is your deck. You can play any card face down as a land. Once it is placed face down as a land, it's a land. It can be tapped for any color mana you want. You can play lands as normal lands if you want. Okay, but they don't count as lands, they just count as resources. So what we're basically doing is we're playing with 3 packs, kill the other person, 3 random packs, any set.
Oh.
Now, this opens up some interesting... From the start, you've basically gone metagame. Do you choose 3 awful, awful packs? 3 truly hideous boosters? And use those. And then run the risk of getting all 3 for yourself. Or do you pick 3 really strong packs? And run the risk of not getting any of them?
So hang on, just to clarify... You said they don't count as lands when they're played face down. So right. Anything that says equal to the number of lands, destroy target lands...
Doesn't include those.
Okay, so even when you play a land, it becomes just a resource.
When you play a land, face up as a land, it's a land. Otherwise, face down, it's a resource.
So only special lands you'd do that. Basic land is my point.
Now, some people from the few that listen to this may realize that this is a little similar to things like spoils. And I will freely admit that I got a little bit of ideas from there, as well as other things. But more than anything, it came down to, we want to play a game with a limited card pool, completely at random.
And we're keeping it different. I think, to be honest, the last two deck challenges have been kind of...
Yeah, they've been kind of, you know, what you'd expect. What you'd expect.
Oh, fine! My creations! And
Well, with you, we didn't expect much, so we're not too different.
Listen to the losers talk. Oh, it was a bad idea. Oh, it wasn't fun.
Oh, schnuckums.
I mean, with that, of course, let's be honest, with the way things are going, somehow me and Cam are going to end up playing the same deck, and Russ is going to win.
Well, no, because we're going to have three random... Everyone's going to be playing five color. There's no way around that.
You can't help our luck. It'll happen. But if anyone listening actually has an idea for a deck challenge or something interesting, definitely hit us up on the email address. They will be in the show notes. And let us know. We're interested to see what you guys think and what we can do for future deck challenges. But at this point, I'm really excited by this idea.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be brilliant.
That's,
Touché, Cameron.
This will obviously be a proxy one because, I mean, someone's gonna do something silly like, I'm gonna choose Alpha. I'm gonna choose Judgment. And it's gonna be like, well, yeah, we can't get those packs. So, this will be a proxy battle.
Oh, come on. Someone's gonna fork out for some Alpha boosters.
Yeah, you can. Get me one while you're at it. I'll give you $5 tomorrow. There you go. Joy. Yeah. So we'll do that, and we'll get those games actually done this week.
Posted and already, so you guys have to wait 2 weeks because I know it's been hard for you.
Are waiting for us? Thank you.
Slams. Get a life.
I'm so sorry. What, you couldn't find other podcasts to fill in the time?
Well, good podcasts to fill in the time.
Hey, We've reached episode 3. I've blatantly pointed out a segue. We've made fun of a few people and insulted some celebrities. Like, I'm pretty sure that makes us a full-fledged podcast, right?
Sure, yeah, what's your point?
Where we come?
We're still crap. What's your point?
Yeah. We podcast like we play Magic.
Poorly. And with our eyes closed.
See the fun.
Poorly? Wait, I missed that. Did I say something witty?
No, Cam said poorly, like poor and also badly. No money and badly. Talking about casual.
Yeah, terrible.
Poor Stephen.
Alright.
Cool. So has anyone else got anything they want to go over? Before we look at wrapping things up?
Not really. I mean, that would require effort and energy.
Other than the fact, I kind of want to get me and Cam to convince you to get an EDH deck together.
Oh. I'm working on that one. I'm working on one. I can just ask me to screw with everyone. But yeah, okay. So moving on, there's a few shout-outs I'd like to put out really quick. Shoutoutcast. Well, I thought it was cool. I mean, we did get some appreciation after the first show. So I just want to let them know that it's cool. So to Magical Yak and our self-proclaimed number one fan, Jeremy Fisher, cheers for hitting us up. It was good to hear from you, even if you did near kill Cam. I'm possibly going to mess this up, so I apologize. But Will from Kitchen Thinks, for two reasons. A, cheers for being a good dude. It was really good talking to the guys, just talking trash on Twitter. They seem really cool. So if you guys are listening, check out their podcast. And B, not for just telling us we had to change our name, because we had nothing else, and that would have been terrible. And he was cool about it. So, thank you.
Yeah, I don't think that the Pit Imps would have really worked.
No.
Ravening rat.
Another, funnily enough, last shout out, Angelo from the Pittance podcast. I think we were screwed from the start.
Wow, we were really screwed.
Just want to say thanks to him. He hit me up really early on. Gave us some advice and let us know he was listening, which was really cool.
Shows how much I listen to podcasts.
to Chewy for all the work he does, which reminds me, donate, yay, guys.
Yay, Chewy.
The first one.
He's delicious. I mean.
He's not a baby, Ken.
Please don't eat Chewy. I'm not sure anyone would appreciate that. But yeah, make sure if you guys are listening, consider donating. As we said in the first one, it's not cheap. It's not easy. The guy puts a lot of effort and work in, and yeah, we all want free podcasts, so chip in. And I think last of all, of course, contact information. Ross, how can we get help?
You can add me on MTGO as Captain Coot, CAPNKOOK. Same thing on Twitter. Let me know, hit me up, and I'll bore you with a bad joke.
Yeah, all hate mail that way. Cam, how can people get in touch with you?
Send a self-addressed stamp envelope to... No. Twitter, Devolution013, because Devolution was taken, so it's like Revolution, but with a D, and then 013. And on MTGO, Devolutionary, so it's like Revolutionary, but with a D.
Cool, and of course, you can get me on... Twittered on Twitter. Also our email address, which is thechinkinks@thisaddress.co.nz. That is actually the email address.
I'd like to point out that at Twittered on Twitter is TW1TT3D.
Yeah, I wasn't going to try that again after the first episode.
Okay. TW1TT3D. The single most annoying name in the world to message.
Oh, it's because I'm cool at
it. It doesn't show up on my shortlist. I actually have to type it in order to annoy you.
Anyways.
All right.
Of course, email us if you've got hate mail or suggestions, or if you found those Iranian body parts from the babies that Cam's been eating, or you just want to tell us about
body parts.
Yeah, we'll deny it, of course. But yeah, please do. We love to hear from everyone. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, what we can do, if you've got suggestions or ideas, I want to hear from you. And with that, I think we're done. So,
we're done.
Later.
Game on. Yeah. Later.
Cool. My dear.